All right, folks, we're gonna do a live episode here with one of our folks who've been there from the beginning, Joe Voss. I'm on the phone with her right now so we can walk her through kind of getting in to the podcast. I'm going to click on and bring in Maria here. So, hey, Maria, how you doing?
Hey, David, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. We got Joe on the phone, and we're going to try to walk Joe into this. So, Joe, can you pull down the list? Just pull the list down, swipe down, and then just let it pop back up, and it will refresh.
Oh, this is great. Really great. I love us working through the technology bumps together.
Totally. So, Joe, do you see it say live?
See if it works, and if it doesn't, then I'll be back to you.
If you go back one screen and then come back, it'll do it. Yep, that's what I just did.
I see it now. I've got it.
Okay, click in.
To one of the chairs.
Yep.
Right. Call in.
Oh, you're here. You come, Joe. Here you come, Joe. Joe, I'm going to hang up on the phone and I'm going to answer on the podcast. Joe.
Hello.
Oh my gosh. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
It's great. I mean, how can it not be great on a day with all this sunshine?
Oh my gosh, isn't it nice? Thank you so much, David, and thanks, Joe, for working through that with us.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Thanks for helping out.
I'll talk to you later. See you two later.
Bye.
All right. See you, David.
Anyway, nice to talk to you, Maria.
Oh, nice to talk to you too, Joe. And I'm so excited to do this today because David told me something that I actually did not know before jumping onto this podcast.
What was that?
That you and your wonderful husband, Charlie, were actually the first donors to Common Purpose back when the idea was still getting started back in 2017, maybe he thinks, or maybe 2018.
Something like that.
That's so cool. Even been in it longer than I have.
Well, heck, first, second, third, it wouldn't really have mattered, but he does remind me about that once in a while, so that's good.
Yeah. Well, it's an absolute honor and a treat for me to do this. And this is one of our With CP podcast episodes where I'm going to be delving in and having a bit of a deeper conversation for a community highlight with Joe Voss here, who's an awesome superstar person in our CP community.
And I'm the one that's honored.
Thanks. And we're just excited to be able to talk to you and hopefully share a little bit about why you are with us in Common Purpose and just kind of what motivates you.
Well,
yeah. Gee. So could you just introduce yourself, maybe give us a little bit about you?
Well, first of all, I'm retired. I always forget I'm retired. I'm a retired teacher and educator over many years. And I retired about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And in my teaching and previous to that, my first teaching was actually in the late 60s. I always tried to bring some kinds of social justice things into it. The terminology for things has changed, but the concept of doing that has been constant. And after I retired, I was really happy to discover Common Purpose and have a different kind of, sort of focus and outlet to my desire to continue that kind of thing, because society's not fixed yet and it'll be a long time.
Yeah. So how did you hear about Common Purpose?
You know, I'm not positive, but I think...
Probably David.
Well, yeah, but how did I hear about David? We attended some of his lectures two or three years before Common Purpose, and we did not go on a pilgrimage, but we went on what I think it was called a learning tour back to the kind of Southeast or East anyway. Well, East, but Washington, D.C. I had no idea how Southern it is. But anyway, with David, 22 of us on a bus. It was really fun and a really great highlight of my more recent learning. And I think we got in touch originally with those lectures through Jody Nyquist, who had been in the communications department and knew David.
Oh my gosh, shout out Jody Nyquist.
I know. And Jody Nyquist was my childhood babysitter.
No way.
Yes.
And oh, that's what a small world. That's so cool.
I know. And we had kept in touch a little bit over the years, not right after that, but in our adult years.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, look at that.
Isn't that
funny? Really, really cool. A thing like that. Yeah. Well, I also, just to let the listeners know, Joe and I actually did have like a really awesome conversation last week, or was it over the weekend? Pretty
something
recently.
Like that. It's okay.
And it was just one of those, I mean, I know time right now, right? But it was just a conversation, a little video chat just to catch up. I really have been craving a lot of those interactions and
some
of the longer conversations that I used to have with folks in Common Purpose. And to be honest, it's really fulfilling for me, even if we're not talking about Common Purpose, to be able to have conversations, especially with women like you, Joe, because I'm not a person who grew up having a lot of like any grandmothers or having kind of older women in my life that could, you know, share a little bit of their perspective and a little bit about their lives. And I think it's something that as a young woman, I've really been craving as well and have appreciated so much within the Common Purpose community. Yeah. So I've really appreciated that deep conversation that we had. And you shared a little bit in that conversation and mentioned it a little bit here about some of the stuff that you, social justice ideas you were thinking about in the 60s and some experiences that you had. So I was wondering if you'd be willing to share a little bit about how those perspectives have changed, kind of maybe a little bit about where you started and how that ended up playing into your involvement with Common Purpose.
Well, I think I could, it started even probably before the things I talked about in our conversation, because I have an interesting, let's say, combination family. My mother was from Texas, and originally, I mean, I never really knew her when she was, you know, young, but she was born in North Texas, which is really more like a southern state. But West Texas, where our relatives lived and we visited a lot, was where I kind of saw the perspective of the South, even though it wasn't deep South, but so that was El Paso. But and people say that's more Texas than South, but you know, it's kind of all relative to me. It's all South because it's not here. But so she was from that kind of culture, but she was not racist any more than, well, all of us as white people, and really maybe anybody, have vestiges or threads that are racist. I mean, we just do. It's so systemic. But in terms of the kind of external, aware, intentional racism that is really common in some areas, she was basically just too sweet and compassionate. Her relatives, I can't say all were like that, but she was. And so she was first a really a loving impactful influence on me.
Mm.
But at the same time, I had some experiences down there where, like my grandmother, who in her youth actually was an amazing woman, who was like the first one in that North Texas town, first woman to drive a car back in the early 1900s. And she would do crazy things. I know. She would do crazy things in her youth, like drive out and park at night near where she believed a KKK gathering was happening, because she wanted to spy on them and figure out what they were doing. So she was pretty kind of radical for a little while. But when I knew her, she was doing things like wondering why I wanted to play with the little girl across the street who was Mexican-American.
Mm.
And I, you know, as far as I was concerned, she was the little girl in the neighborhood. But so I had a lot of mix in my time when I would visit Texas. In Seattle, I think I just knew mostly white kids. Yeah, I think my school experiences might have had a few kids of color, but I don't remember that. I do remember one teacher who was an African-American woman in seventh grade science, which was great. I mean, in terms of an influence on me. But not remarkable really in my life. But what I did have with my father's side of the family was a little more of an intellectual bent and very progressive even way back then.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't grow up with intentional racism, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
What I grew up with was when a lot of the first, you know, 60s things were happening with, dogs and fire hoses and sit-ins and trying to integrate schools. I was really young, and we would hear news on the radio in the morning before going to school. And I just remember being so upset about all of that. So I guess I was lucky in the sense that without having realized it, I was brought up in a way that made me upset. Because I think there were people in the country who were happy with it or weren't upset when people were, you know, fire hosed or beaten for trying to get their rights. And so I have strong memories about that. And my dad's side of the family, again, my dad himself, but particularly it was a very matriarchal side of the family. A lot of the women were educators and my mom was too, but I mean, these guys go way back. And very, like I say, very, my mother or my grandmother on that side was a social worker on the Navajo reservation for many years purposely. And yeah, there was just a lot of background stuff. My great grandmother, who was a doctor on that side, was a Quaker. And,
wow.
Anyway, there were a lot of things. They were back. McConnell's neck of the woods, Kentucky or Nebraska area, back then. But you know, anyway, that's just a mix. But all I'm saying is, I was conscious of things way back, and so in the '60s, I purposely, crazy little white girl, took a job. Because I believed strongly in education and that it would elevate and give power. I took a job teaching at a vocational education training program that was a government supported training program in the 60s, mostly for people who were of color, but other people were part of it too. But I'd say 80 to 90% African-American and then other things. It was under the Manpower Training Act, and it was called SOIC, Seattle Opportunities Industrialization Training Center. And there were OICs in other cities. And I taught there for about a year or two, and it was very difficult. Nobody told me what to do. I didn't have a teaching degree. I had a degree in sociology, right? Save the world. But anyway, I arrived to teach, quote, communication skills. And I walked into the classroom and there were about 30 adults kind of glaring at me because what was I doing there? And there was one old, really in bad shape and totally irrelevant to any of those people, English textbook. There was one to use as a reference. And I thought, why would I use that, right? So I kind of had to make everything up from scratch. So there was this, what they called pre-vocational training of communication skills and math that people had to do for 6 weeks. Nobody wanted to. And then they could go down to the actual auto shop, the carpentry shop, all this stuff in a different building, the vocational training itself. Mm-hmm. And so I finally thought, oh my God, why would they even want to be here? Well, they didn't because they wanted to be fixing cars or learning pipe fitting. There were a few women and they were almost all tracked into the business skills division. But anyway, so I went down to the vocational training area and tried to interview the teachers down there because I thought I've got to get some stuff I could use. So I did. I got vocabulary lists from them and I got a textbook from the carpentry guy that I could use and make. Back then we made drawings on dittos, right? I drew things like what carpentry framing would look like. Mm. And then I would put the vocabulary on it and they could study that. And then we used that vocabulary if it was in my section that was for the carpenters. We would use that vocabulary so at least it would be something they cared about, because how can you teach like how to write? Some people couldn't write, or they, my goal was if they could end up communicating well enough to do a job interview and fill out forms, that was great. And so we worked on stuff like that, but we tried to use vocabulary from what they were going to get into so that they could be feeling like that it pertained to them and maybe was getting them a leg up on what they'd be learning down there. And that worked some. And then I also, there were more advanced classes, and for those, I was audacious enough, again, this crazy little white girl, 22 or something. I was audacious enough and presumptuous enough, I guess, maybe is a good word, to think I could get people to write about Black Power. I would put little questions on the board and try and get people to give their views in like a few sentences just to get writing skills going. And sometimes they would. I would usually give an alternate that had to do with their vocation. But, you know, it was an interesting time and it was a very interesting environment. So that was my big first thing that I thought, okay, I'm going to try to do this.
And so it sounds like your kind of experiences with these inequities that were caused by systemic racism started to get you thinking about policy and thinking about how you can get involved to change things?
Well, yes, that's exactly it. And I think that all came out of the racism that I saw happening even as a child. But I think what had changed was before, I was kind of fearful. I didn't know what I could do. I was afraid to try anything. I was probably afraid of Black men. I know I was. Not seriously, but just, you know, shyly. Does that make sense? I was less afraid of violence as just more the unknown, which I think a lot of people who haven't been around other kinds of people are. And I'm sure there was some society instilled racism even in that. But I saw that first teaching job as my efforts to try to get over that and dive in.
Right. Gosh. And it's just amazing to me when you're talking about that and in a way that hurts a little bit as well, just thinking about how many decades ago those experiences that you've had were. And then thinking about the recent news, if you've heard about the 25-year-old Black man that was recently jogging in Georgia, Ahmaud Arbery, if you've heard about him, in Glynn County, Georgia, in February. No. And yeah, well, he it's just something that's been starting to get some attention on some social media, and people are writing right now to the district attorney there in Glynn County in Georgia to try and get justice for Ahmaud Arbery, who was cruelly hunted down while he was jogging in his own neighborhood by two white men that thought he fit the description of somebody who might have broken into their home before. And they shot him in plain daylight. And this happened in February, and folks are starting to, in the recent couple of days, gather some energy and some support around trying to get justice for him and his family.
So was he killed?
2020. Yes. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. There's a video that got leaked of it, which is why it's been going around pretty recently. And it's, oh my gosh, I can't even watch that full video. I'm tired of seeing those videos. I'm tired of hearing these stories. I just think for somebody like you who has, you're sounds like for most of your life and has been kind of dealing with racism in different ways, from the perspective as a white woman, I just appreciate you having courage and being willing to speak on it. And from your perspective, when things haven't necessarily gotten better enough to prevent things like what happened to Ahmaud Arbery from happening. Well, so I just appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you. I feel like I do so little compared to so many, but I try, and I guess it's kind of off and on. But what I was going to say is, when you said that two white guys hunted him down, that's just such an absolute parallel to the experience that I had in Chicago on the South Side when I was young, when our friend Charles was killed by two white medical students. And because they were white medical students, nothing ever happened. So it's like, yeah, it hasn't come that far in terms of progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were telling me about that story, and like just all of these things, it really shakes me.
Yeah,
it makes me just terrified and angry. And I honestly don't know. I'm still trying to process what that means for me, because I'm also 25. I'm the same age. I am a Black woman, and I like to go jogging. I jog a few times a week here. And it just kind of, it makes me feel like the work that we're doing is always going to be important in common purpose, that the work that we're doing is more important than ever, because those elected officials in Georgia are the ones that make the laws that allow for that kind of thing to happen. The Absolutely. Stand your ground, or them saying that it was okay because they thought that he was someone who had broken into their home, and those laws allowed those men to chase him down and murder him just on the street. And we have to get in elected officials who are not racist, who believe in sensible gun laws, who are going to fight for progress and fight for the people. And it just makes our work so important. And I'm glad to be in it with you, Joe.
Oh, well, I'm glad to be here. I think about, you know, being an educator, it's like you try to promote what you're saying, you know, working for justice. With every student that you meet, and I did that through projects, because I felt like, okay, I can teach you math, but what's really important? Yes, you need skills. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs skills. That's really easy compared to teaching. Well, to use a very conservative word, but encompassing good citizenship, because good citizenship to me is a whole lot different than what it used to mean to other people. It really has to do with working for a more just and inclusive democracy, which is what Common mm-hmm. Purpose is all about. Mm-hmm. But oh my goodness, it's amazing. We have had progress in some mm-hmm. areas, but so far to go. Yeah. And I mean, and not just the United States, but certainly here in a huge yeah. way. But I'm thinking, because we have a daughter and her family that live in Vancouver, British Columbia, we listen to Canadian mm. news a lot. In fact, sometimes more than the U.S. news. We get really tired of listening to the stuff here sometimes, especially everything COVID. But there was a thing on the news the other night in Vancouver. I think it was Vancouver. It might have been in Ontario. I can't remember if I watched it on the local Vancouver news or the national Canadian, where a woman was just walking down the street, and a guy he starts to walk by, but totally unprovoked, turns around and punches her in the face and knocks her down, and then just kept walking. Well, it's because she was Chinese. Right now, the Chinese, Canadians, Chinese Americans, there's very many Chinese in Vancouver and in Canada, maybe more even than here, but they are taking mm-hmm. a beating over being blamed for COVID. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just this whole attitude that yeah. gee, if you're white, you can take license to do whatever you want.
Right. Right.
It's really discouraging. Although I think what we have to do is while we're grieving, and I do, and it sounds like you are. I'm gonna go check that story now later. But while we're grieving over the losses and the setbacks and the horror that still goes on, I think sometimes we need to grasp at the straws in a good way of the things we see that change, and the few things that we see that oh yeah, that's getting better, or people yeah. that are rising as leaders, including people like you, Maria. It's just amazingly wonderful to have you and the Stacey Abrams of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's that when good things happen, I think we have to let it just make our day, because otherwise it's too discouraging to see the bad stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Common Purpose is definitely going to be continuing to do what we can to have some progress and create some hope and inspire people to join us in fighting for that just and inclusive democracy that we're talking about.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say for listeners who haven't heard of the story that we're mentioning yet, I encourage you to look up Ahmaud Arbery's name and hear about his story. It's spelled A-H-M-A-U-D, and then his last name, Arbery, A-R-B-E-R-Y.
Thank you for the spelling. Yeah.
Of course. And of course, if you are someone who is disturbed, or if the video will cause you too much pain or to bring up some trauma with you, I just want to warn people, there is a video that has come out about what happened, and that's why it's getting some traction right now, which I guess speaks to kind of the pros and cons of one of the pros of technology, of cameras being available and out there to share these stories. I just encourage people to see it to hear about the story if you are in the mental space to be able to do so, and just continue to think about what we as people can do to make some change on it. And I'm sorry, it's a little bit heavy. I hadn't expected
it. Oh my gosh.
That was so fun, and I hadn't expected this podcast to take kind of the heavy turn.
Well, it's important though to bring these things up. And
yeah,
it is heavy. As you may know, or maybe David does, in my family, or in me with family and friends, I've lost two or three people, I guess, to gun violence also. And that's something that I've been working on since 1972. I think when you're when you're in these kinds of fights, it's okay to sometimes take a little break and step back and do a different kind of support. Mm-hmm. Active support and like going to hearings and things is really important. But sometimes it's like watching that video. If it's too much, mm-hmm. you can find a less direct way to still really support the work. Actually, mm-hmm. one of the things that led Charlie and me, although it doesn't mean we don't like to be active and take action ourselves, but one of the things that Charlie and I like about financially supporting Common Purpose is that way we can get both in there and do some support other people doing work as well as doing it ourselves, which of course is a better dollar value anyway. If we're supporting 10 people doing something instead of just doing our one person's work, that's bigger anyway. But Charlie said something one time, which I think was really significant. He was talking about, we were just having this conversation with the two of us about why give to Common Purpose instead of, you know, some of the other really wonderful organizations that maybe are national or global. Mm-hmm. And we do support some things that way, but why, you know, give more to Common Purpose? And he says, you know, it's really amazing because here I can see exactly where my money goes and I can see what's mm-hmm. happening, and it's more real and it's more motivating and it keeps us into it. Mm-hmm. It's not at arm's length. And I think that's really important.
Oh my gosh. Joe, thank you so much. Listeners, I want you to know, even though I am development manager with Common Purpose and work in fundraising, this was not a planted question or a planted story.
No, it's okay. And
Joe's
and
just awesome.
and don't worry. The next time you and I have a conversation that's not a podcast, I'm going to ask a lot of stuff about you.
Well, I look forward to it. You can call me up anytime.
I'll do it.
All right. Well, it's nice to be able to have conversations with you while we're here in COVID. But, you know, on a lighter side, is there anything else that you've been doing, any TV shows you've been watching or any hobbies that you've picked up here over the last couple of months that have been giving you a little bit of that self-care aspect that you're talking about, or just helping you get through the dark days?
Well, I have to say the sunshine's the best thing that helps me get through dark days. So whenever it's out, you know, I'm in a better place.
Yeah.
But I will say one thing that's been a little bit interesting is I'm cooking more, as many people are. And this was not necessarily my choice. I used to cook a lot. I mean, I used to do a lot of, you know, sort of the back to basics, bread baking and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of got over it and I got my fill of it and decided, oh yeah, okay, I've proven to myself that I can do that. So I don't need to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm not baking bread, but I am back to, as many people, doing a lot more cooking because I'm not heading over to the grocery store and getting stuff that I can either just heat up or like deli roasted chicken or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. Sometimes I actually enjoy that. The only kind of big project that I've gotten into, and it's not that big, but you know, that's making something from scratch that's not just dinner, is I've been making my daughter's granola recipe, and it's so good. I'm doing that. And yeah. But I'm also, I'm not too excited about TV. I'm not a real TV watcher. We watch once in a while. I like this show that just finished its first season called Zoe's Playlist. Zoe's Amazing Playlist, something like that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I thought it was really good. It's got a lot of, it's got a lot of diversity in it, both in terms of gender and racial. And it's got, they just handled this issue of her dad dying. And I've never seen something like that handled that well on TV. And
oh my gosh,
it's musical. Everybody dances and sings. I know that sounds weird.
Oh, I'm sold. Sold.
I know that sounds weird. I don't know when they'll be back on. I know. Well, maybe they'll stream the old episodes. I think it was only on for, you know, a couple months and then it went away because they, quote, finished their season. But I sure hope it comes back. I have been so impressed. It's like Broadway people that have been doing it. I mean, in terms of the dancers and the singers. And
oh, good stuff.
And it's amazing.
Do you know what the network, what network that's on?
Ooh, I don't. Might have been Channel 5 or Channel 7.
Oh, that's okay.
So anyway, I think it was Sunday night. I don't know. There's two or three things that I sometimes catch, but I don't stop what I'm doing to go watch it, except that one.
Yeah, yeah.
I am
all here for the musical movies. I grew up a big Disney movie.
Oh, right.
Kid, big Disney movie fan. And I'm at the point now where with a lot of the movies that I watch that are shows that have songs in it, I annoy my boyfriend from knowing all the words and seeing everything. So
That's good. You've got a partner. You got a partner in crime, at least. I can't always get Charlie to really enjoy wanting to see that stuff. And sometimes he might enjoy what he watches, but he never thinks he's going to. So it's hard to get agreement.
But he
did like this show. He did. He was right there with me. But the other thing I've been spending time on is doing my taxes the old way.
And I'm still
not done, and it's been way too long because when I'm doing something like that and there's COVID and I'm not getting enough exercise, I cannot sit in the chair very long. I just get stiff and hurt. I have to get up. Mm. So that's my excuse to have the attention span of a gnat when I'm working on that stuff.
Well, so it sounds like cooking and watching the show and doing the taxes.
That's not the fun stuff.
That's not
part of the fun.
I was jealous that you were saying that you've got like someone in your neighborhood who's doing some grocery shopping for you.
Well,
that's what's up.
Well, you know, I'm over 65, haha, or whatever the thing is. And so quite a bit. And so my daughter, who is in the healthcare system, works in the healthcare system in British Columbia. You know, she's very, by the way, the healthcare coordination up there has been amazing. And we hear from their health officers. We don't just hear from politicians. Not that Inslee has been bad on this stuff, but he's been great. But Canada hears from their top doctor of the country all the time.
You're kidding.
No, all the time. Dr. Tam, T-A-M. And then Dr. I just forgot her name. The health minister of British Columbia. Dr. Patty Henry, I think. She's blonde. And she comes on and she's got the most calming voice. She's been in charge and telling everybody what to do for 3 months. And she is amazing. But anyway, my daughter is on our case as old people, not to have exposure, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was not only doing our grocery shopping, but I was doing grocery shopping for my sister and her husband, who definitely are vulnerable and cannot, you know, should not go out at all. And so our daughter was very concerned and said, "Mom, you can't go out that often." And I'd be going to one store and then I'd be going to another store and you can't do that anymore, Mom. So I finally got this guy next door, and he's 19. And I looked in my, I was just, you know, trying to put my groceries away before we talked. And there's some things in those bags that I don't think I ordered. And there's some other things that maybe I ordered that aren't there and maybe got substituted. And I'm a little bit, I mean, it's like, but you know what? We're going to eat it and we're grateful.
Yeah. Well, that's good and just awesome to hear, in Canada, about the ways that they've had healthcare professionals being able to speak and inform people and hopefully influence some of the policy and the legislation maybe. And it just speaks to
it's amazing.
How important it is for us to be able to have more healthcare professionals in those conversations. And it makes me excited when we talk about how Common Purpose is going to go support Dr. Barbara Beaulieu, who is in Kansas. And I know
that's so exciting.
I believe she's an anesthesiologist, I think, mm-hmm. and how we've got Dr. Al Gross running in Alaska for Senate that we're going to go support, who is a surgeon. And even here at home in Washington State with Dr. Kim Schreier mm-hmm. in the 8th District, where we're going to be putting a lot of efforts. It's just, I mean, COVID has really shown us, hasn't it, how important it is?
It sounds mm-hmm. hopeful. And well, let me give you a recommendation. I mean, I'm not supposed to be giving ads, I suppose, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm recommending that you watch. This is on Channel 2, and it might change. It might be changing. I don't know. There's something about changing channels, but Channel 2 right now at 10 o'clock at night carries, quote, The National, unquote, Monday through Friday. Well, I think they do it on weekends too, Monday through Friday.
The National?
It's called The National. It's their news.
Okay.
It's the National Canadian News on CBC, right? Mm-hmm. And you'll see how different the coverage is. I mean, you know, they go off and talk about stuff happening in their provinces and a little other news. I mean, it used to be all COVID, but now they've got a few other things. You know, they had a mass murder up there in Nova Scotia, which was awful. 22 people were killed. And you know what they did? They immediately started banning assault rifles. Mm-hmm. Why don't we do this? Anyway, okay. I get off my soapbox, but I mean, it was like immediate, like the next day, the prime minister was out there, and I just kind of like the gal, the prime minister in New Zealand had done months or whenever it was ago. But also right after that at 11, Monday mm-hmm. through Friday, the local Vancouver news comes on, and that's where it's Bonnie. It's not Patty. It's Dr. Bonnie Henry. You'll probably hear a word from her at least once. And they even have on their CBC channel, they even have little quick, ad spots of both Dr. Tam and at different times, Dr. Henry coming on, reminding people to wash their hands and stuff. I mean, so these people are now totally familiar to the Canadian public and beloved, mm-hmm. totally beloved.
Wow.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, Dr. Bonnie Henry for president would be my choice.
Oh.
We just got to deal with her citizenship.
Yeah, I've got to look more into some of what's going on in Canada, it sounds like. Maybe just to get some reference or some comparison. It sounds like it's all good stuff.
The other thing is, some of their areas, you know, like the United States, have had more trouble than others in terms of COVID outbreak being serious and more deaths, but all of Canada is less serious than all of the United States for sure per capita. Mm-hmm. And Washington State has a population of, I think, is it around 8 or 9 million? I can't remember. This may not be the right numbers, but I'm going to give you the right ratio. If they have about 8 to 9 million.
Google says 7.5 million in Washington State.
Okay, sorry. I was getting my numbers mixed up. Okay, 7.5 million here. So theirs is around 5 million. 5.1, okay. I think. And yet, in Washington State, we have how many deaths and how many cases? They have about 124 deaths. And even if you up that sum for the ratio, we've mm-hmm. got about at least eight times as many cases. I mean, I did the math the other day and I didn't bother to remember it much, but I was just satisfying myself that the per capita extent of both mm-hmm. cases and deaths up there were much less. And I think it's because they just jumped on it. They just jumped on it way back when and told people what to do. Not in a the kind of way that sounds like a dictatorship, but in a very engaging way that got people cooperating.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they had a few people in the very beginning that were sitting, there were pictures of people sitting too close on, you know, places and like in Vancouver, they closed beaches, I think, for a while. But basically, people have been just a whole lot more cooperative. So they're actually going to start opening up a little bit more. And mm-hmm. I fear it a little bit, but just because my family's up there. But I think I think for them, it's working because things have really, you know, gone down. And the number of new cases has just gone way, way, way down.
Well, we can only hope that that happens here as well.
I know.
Then as soon as we feel safe and comfortable, then I'm going to be ready to hit the road. And Common Purpose is going to be ready to hit the road
and travel.
And get a chance to make a difference. And then
I know you and I were going to go somewhere. Where were we going to go? Maine or someplace? We were going to go somewhere.
I'll go where you go, for sure,
And vice versa. We just have to figure out a place that needs us and go there. Someplace that doesn't have COVID.
And it's one of the hardest things for me, too, is just kind of, for lack of a better term, just kind of staying in my lane. When, you know, I'm one of the co-leads alongside Mary Fiegel with the Iowa team. So
maybe it was Iowa we were going to. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get a chance to hopefully get a chance to go to Iowa with our great partners there in Des Moines. And I knew that in the past I had been the Nevada state captain, and there's a possibility of me being able to go to Nevada with the Common Purpose Next, the CP Next community. And then
I guess I don't qualify for that one.
I was trying to figure out how to go with Emily Carmichael, who was someone else I've been on the podcast with, and to go head over to Alaska because I thought it'd be fun. One of my best friends, Maiwa Aina, who was one of the leadership members of Common Purpose from the start, is she's in Alaska. So I was like, how did I get over to Alaska?
Yeah, and I went to North Carolina.
Oh, cool stuff. And see, North Carolina? My little sister, she's 15, and she and I went to North Carolina in 2019 to work with You Can Vote, and she's asking me again, can we go? And I'm like, okay, well, can I get over to North Carolina?
And okay, just, like, if you get a North Carolina thing figured out, I will go with you, because that's where we went and worked with You Can Vote, and I'd love to go again.
Oh, they're a great organization. They really are. And I know that just a plug for You Can Vote in North Carolina right now. I've been seeing that they are looking for people to help them make some calls for the census. So if you've got a little bit of time and it's amazing that we're able to do this, but we do provide a lot of opportunities, whether it's our Washington State work or our partnership with Sister District writing letters, or it's phone banking for Wisconsin or Iowa, which we did recently, or Virginia. And I know the Florida phone banking has, Team Florida phone banking has kicked off today. So I know there's a lot to be making calls about, but I know that You Can Vote in North Carolina has been needing some volunteers to make some calls around the census, which we know is going to be important for to fight gerrymandering by making sure that we know we have accurate counts and representation of the people in our districts. And in that way, we'll be able to allocate resources, hopefully, to match the needs. So there's all this stuff to do.
I know. I think what needs to happen is, well, first I need to just call you up anyway, so we can just chat some more.
But then
I also need to call you up and get on board with some of that after I finish my taxes. I can't let myself do anything else until I finish, because it's really easy for me to want to not have to do them, right? It's drudgery.
May 7th.
And I'm not the tech person who has everything in some Quicken or other kind of program. I just have receipts to pull out and categorize and count and add up and all that kind of junk. And we don't do the short form. We do the long form, which I think might be kind of stupid, but here we are. And then we have to give this all to this CPA guy that, you know, used to be important when Charlie had a small business and stuff before we retired.
Right.
But maybe we shouldn't have to do all this anymore. Maybe we just fill out the short form and be done with it. But I think I need to ask them, okay, should I still be doing this after all these years, or could I just quit? Just not count anything.
Oh, Joe. Well, I'm going to have to wish you the best of luck on that. And
thank you, dear.
We are at 5 o'clock here. So
oh, my
I'm
goodness.
Going to, can you believe it?
No.
I'm going to wrap us up here. And the last thing I just wanted to say, Joe, you're absolutely welcome to give me a call. But if there's anybody listening right now that hasn't necessarily gotten connected to some of our remote field work opportunities, you can just go to our website, Common Purposes website, at cpnow.org, cpnow.org. And at the top, you'll see that there are a bunch of tabs, and you'll want to click on that National Fieldwork tab to see what types of remote opportunities that we've got going on. We are going to keep filling them in as soon as we get them, and we're relentlessly tracking down these opportunities. Right now, there is census stuff in Virginia that's on the website that you can help out with New Virginia Majority. There is helping out with phone banking in support of the Wisconsin May 12th election, and the opportunity in North Carolina isn't up here on the website, but if you send me a message or something, I can share that with you. But we welcome and we need as many people as we can. Like Joe and I were talking about, this is the moment. This is an urgent time for us to be able to do what we can to make sure people can vote so that we can get some representation that is going to be making legislation and policy that supports progress and supports the people. And Joe, you have been an incredible supporter of all of those things from the start, and we're absolutely grateful. And thank you so much for taking the time today to share a little bit of your story and help us hopefully recruit some more people into the work.
Well, you're welcome. And Maria, thank you so much for your amazing leadership. You are amazing. People need to find out more about you.
Oh, thank you. Well,
so appreciate
I look
you.
Forward to, thank you. We'll connect soon. Okay, Joe?
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks, everyone.